I'm Will Shires, and this is Talking Trucks. 2.5 years ago, we invited Heiko Selzem, Managing Director at Mercedes-Benz Trucks UK, to be grilled in the CAF. And it was a proper grilling too. And it covered some really uncomfortable ground. Parts availability, downtime, inconsistent dealer support, and the feeling among some operators that the product was being let down after the keys were handed over. But to Heiko's credit, he didn't try to wriggle out of it. He accepted there'd been mistakes, he explained what had gone wrong, and he put his name to a plan to fix it. Now, today, we're going to revisit those issues and find out what, if anything, has actually changed for operators since that interview. Welcome, Heiko.
Thank you. Thank you, Will.
So, let's start with parts. In that previous interview, you acknowledged that service levels had fallen below expectations. For those listeners who don't know, can you briefly explain what actually went wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I can do that. Following our project focus when, you know, the organization took a conscious decision to carve out the truck and bus business from the previous Daimler organization, it was quite clear that within a given time frame, we also have to carve out parts logistics. Yeah, here, especially here in the UK. UK was a pilot market. And setting this up, this truck dedicated parts logistics business model here, we had to do that under immense time pressure. There were a couple of challenges on top to the time pressure. We had to introduce a new warehouse management system, which was SAP based, a new solution for the entire Daimler truck and bus world. We had to find a warehouse here. We had to sort of, you know, onboard people within my team, leading the parts logistics model. And we had to find a warehouse operator, a company named XPO, and bring it all together. And if I'm really honest, that was a bit of a recipe for a disaster, frankly speaking. So what was the issue, especially in the first half of the year 2023, we couldn't deliver the right amount of parts in the right quality within a reasonable time frame to our dealer partners, to our customers at the end. And that was, of course, causing downtime, frustration, pain, and heat. And I wanted to take the opportunity again to really apologize to all our customers and to our dealer partners, which we simply let down, especially in the first half of 2023.
Okay, but you turned it around, because I know for a fact that within a year of that interview, complaints from readers had dropped off significantly. So what changed?
Yeah, so I think, well, honestly speaking, we knew exactly what we had to do. And one big ticket item was our, I call it, warehouse management system. You know, when it was rolled out, it was identified as a minimal viable product. Certain modules were missing, but there were a few system bugs. And we found that out in the first days and weeks of operation. And I would say latest by summer 23, you know, after 4, 5, 6 months, we sort of rectified, you know, the biggest topics within the warehouse management system. I must say, you know, I also changed the management. So I installed a new parts manager leading the team within DT UK, and we trained and qualified and upskilled, you know, our people. And yes, there was also, you know, performance improvement on the XPO side. And, you know, taking all three things into account, that really helped in order to drive the performance to the level our customers can rightfully expect from us. For me, Will, a turning point, honestly speaking, in our performance was especially in November 23. We took a conscious decision to close the warehouse for 5 days. We said we do a clean sweep, we reset, we rebase, we did a full stock count, I think that's the right English expression.
Yep.
And therefore, we knew after 5 days, you know, what are the right quantities, are all the parts in the right bin, in the right location, and that really helped. And from that point onwards, you know, things improved significantly. And I would say as of the sort of, you know, January, Feb 2024, that time frame, we were at the level our customers can rightfully expect us to be.
So what is that level? What is your current first pick rate?
Yeah, so that's a good question, because it's easy to talk about performance improvements. You need to measure it. And for the top assortment, that's the top 400 parts, we are currently at 97.2%. To give you a bit of an indication, in 2023, we were at 67%.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I look into the full assortment, year-to-date 2025, so we ended up with 89% for the full assortment. And also here, the comparison to 2023, we were at 68%. So significant improvements, measurable improvements.
So are you happy now with the present situation, or is there still more work to do? I mean, is 100% possible?
Am I happy? I would say I'm okay with the current performance level, but there is work to do and work to be done and room for improvement. Absolutely. There are three pillars, and I call it the parts area where I want to further improve. Strategically, I want to lead by example, Will, and I want to electrify our parts logistics. You know, one of our slogans is leading sustainable transportation. And I said to my team, and I said to headquarters, why don't we do that? We are not just an OEM. We are also delivering parts to dealers and end customers. And why don't we decarbonize our transport, our logistics when it comes to parts? And we got the green light end of last year. We already sort of, you know, started digging and installing our charging hardware. And we will go live as of July 26, delivering parts emission-free to our dealers and customers. And that's something I'm really proud of. And it's, I must admit, also a steep learning curve for me, if I'm honest. That's one way in order to improve further. We have one final piece in the jigsaw, and that's the connection of our regional logistics center here in the UK and the connection to the GLC, the Global Logistics Center, which is now located in Halberstadt in the eastern part of Germany. You know, that went live end of 2025. And with this, I'm sure we're going to see a further performance improvement when this is connected. And last but not least, it's not good enough just to look at our first pick rate. If I'm really honest, I want to measure also the first pick rate on dealer level. And I couldn't do that 2 years ago, honestly speaking. If you would have asked me, what is the first pick rate on dealer A, B, C, or D? Well, I did not know, honestly speaking. And therefore, we invested really a lot of money into state-of-the-art systems and processes so that we can monitor real life the dealer performance as well. What is the first pick of top assortment, main assortment on dealer level? And I'm really confident that probably by the end of, I would say, H1 2026, all sites, all dealers are fully connected to that system. And that gives me the overview from GLC to regional center here in Willen, even down to dealer level, even down to site. Where do we really stand with parts performance?
Yeah, excellent. Okay. Well, when you've got that electric parts distribution network going, it'd be good for maybe we could jump in one of the trucks and...
By all means.
Should be a good
honestly
story,
speaking. Though. Absolutely, yeah.
Now, tell me, in that earlier conversation, that grilled in the calf, it emerged that independent aftermarket suppliers were sometimes able to source parts faster than you guys.
Yeah.
Why did that happen, and what's changed to prevent that happening again?
Yeah. Why did it happen? I mean, it somehow is linked, you know, to what I just described. I think we never really had an availability issue of parts. Well, we simply couldn't process them. You know, we couldn't inbound them, and then they were in the wrong bin location, and then we couldn't outbound them. And that was causing the issue, frankly speaking. So it was our own sort of inability, you know, to process parts from GLC into a regional center. And that was causing, you know, the downtime on the customer side. We were also a bit, I would say, trapped within these new systems and processes and simply couldn't move out. We weren't, you know, as flexible and agile enough to say, okay, the existing system now doesn't work and it doesn't fly. Let's go to service provider A, B, C, D and order parts manually. Yeah, that simply wasn't there. That didn't work. It was no option, unfortunately. And therefore, I agree, other sort of service providers, they were faster, quicker, and more customer-centric.
Okay. Yeah. Right, let's move on to the dealer network, because that was another area that we did discuss in depth.
Yeah.
Now, you previously described the UK network as heterogeneous in terms of size, service levels, and truck focus. What did you mean by that exactly?
So when I joined, Will, in April 22, basically 4 years ago, you know, the UK team... It became quite apparent that our existing dealer network is, you know, probably the main reason for the existing low performance. That does not mean, you know, that it was all the dealer's fault. First of all, I look into the mirror and I looked at my team, at our team. Do we have a network strategy? You know, do we police standards and how do we manage low performance? And that was not existing, frankly speaking. So it all starts with me, the OEM. When I said heterogeneous, I mean we had, you know, dealer partners the size of selling 800 trucks, selling 135,000 labor hours on an annual basis, truck-focused, providing good service to truck customers. And we had dealer partners selling 100 trucks a year, not focused, selling 25,000 service hours. And that is not sustainable. You cannot run a truck business when you're in this halfway house of selling vans and selling other brands and other makes and then end up with sort of, you know, 100 units trucks on an annual basis. And maybe you get a major fleet order, then you sell 200. That is not what works, what flies. And that's what I meant. You know, heterogeneous in form of size, volume, and service quality.
Okay. And you also said you were about to launch a truck network strategy and appoint a head of truck network. How did that pan out?
So already end of 2023, end of 2022, early 2023, we basically developed our network strategy. We presented it to the top of the house in April and we started implementing it as of September 23. Part of the implementation was, you know, to basically get a new head of network, you know, to the United Kingdom. I brought in Leonhard Niemann from headquarters, who was quite pivotal when it comes to the implementation of the strategy. And since then, you know, we see progress. Our network strategy had an ultimate goal of harmonization to fight, you know, what I said earlier, different sizes, different focus on trucks from dealer to dealer. And we said one key pillar is in our future target picture, we want to have 8 partners selling an average, 800 trucks, selling an average 135,000 service hours. That supports truck focus. That delivers a viable and a sustainable business model for our dealer partners.
Okay. So how are you measuring the dealer performance then? I mean, are you tracking operator-facing outcomes such as VORs and first-time fix rates? Are the metrics improving?
Maybe I come to the metrics first and then I answer the questions about the performance improvement. You know, when you look at our dealer partners, you have your standard metrics in place. You look into the sale of labor hours, parts sales. You look into workshop visits. But they are, for me, just the result of one important topic, and that's customer satisfaction. So for me, Will, I look almost every day, and I call it my ground radar, into our C-Star survey. C-Star is our sort of, customer satisfaction survey.
Okay.
And we get sort of, you know, that feedback on a daily basis on the sales side and on the after-sales side. And then, of course, we have on an annual basis the HTS results, which is a benchmark analysis, you know, with the other OEMs, and we get that once a year. This is what I look at daily, frankly speaking, when it comes to customer satisfaction. There are 3-4 important performance KPIs. I look at them as well. The one thing is I call it compliance and compliance documentation. You know, we do the sort of truck file documentation after a vehicle has left the workshop. You know, we upload that documentation in a timely manner, so when the customer is leaving the workshop, everything is clear, is done, is compliant, and it is uploaded. We weren't great in the past, if I'm really honest, and we have improved with a sort of clear achievement. We are now at 100%. Every truck leaving our workshop, truck file documentation done, and we are compliant. Our customers are compliant. An important KPI is a first fixed visit and service 24 hours. You know, when I say service 24 hours, how quick are we on site supporting our customers? And how good are we, you know, fixing problems on site to get the customer back onto the road? That's important for me. A topic I'm really proud of, we never had that in the past, is our VOR monitoring, vehicle off-road monitoring. If you would have asked me, 2 years ago, do you know, Heiko, how many MB trucks are off the road today, right now, I could not have told you. I did not know. I simply didn't have the data. So we invested really a lot of money into a new software tool. We also have invested in people too that monitor and help me to reduce vehicle off-road. Today, I know exactly how many MB trucks are off-road. I know exactly in which workshop are they. I know exactly what is the problem, and I have a team that follows up, and I'm not kidding here, each and every truck off-road. And that is something that really helps, you know, to reduce downtime and to improve customer satisfaction and subsequently customer loyalty. And it is visible. And I say that with a certain element of pride. I don't mean that in an arrogant way. I think in this case, we are really, in comparison to other OEMs, really benchmark.
Okay. Yeah. So whilst we're talking about dealers, we've got to touch on Scotland. Because during our last interview, you described Scotland as an unsustainable situation.
Yeah.
Since then, we've seen additional investments, such as the authorised repair coverage and the Sicily Eurocentral development.
Yeah.
So is Scotland now structurally sustainable, or is there still work to do?
Yeah, a huge step forward, but still work to do. Frankly speaking, investments have been made. The coverage for this important area is much better than 22 when I joined, because there was no coverage, to be open and honest. And we will see further performance improvements over the year 2026. We have a new workshop in Central Belt. I think it will then, still be, further investments in getting the people on board and train and qualify them until everything is running smothly. So for us, Sicily is a great partner to be selling in this area, but it will be complemented by Old Truck in Falkirk, Auto Services in Perth, as well as FleetSurf Commercials and Govan in Glasgow. For me, it's not only about building dealerships and putting steel and glass into the ground. You need the people as well, and we know that they are not easy to find, and then training and qualifying them, that's what I mean with the work I still have to do.
So what about the rest of the UK dealer footprint then? More changes, more investments coming?
So I would say we are somehow still in the middle of the transformation of our network, Will. We made some real steps, good steps forward. We improved. We consolidated. I started with 15 dealer partners. The strategic goal, as I said earlier, is 8. Yeah, and we achieved that through acquisitions. In some ways, we're going to terminate partners. But we also, honestly speaking, will introduce own retail. And our strategic target picture is fairly clear. Own retail is one key element in our network strategy. And probably already by 2026, second half, we will be able to announce our first investment in the form of own retail in the United Kingdom.
Okay.
So there's still work to do. I'm honest, Will. I thought at the beginning the network transformation is done within 3 years. We probably need 5 years. And that means for me probably 2028 until the full transformation is done.
And are you promising to stay in the UK for those 5 years, or
it's hard to say I'm promising. within this Daimler world, international assignments, they are normally designed for 5 to 6 years. I started 22. I'm someone who wants to see things through, and therefore from my side I'm fully committed, to see it through, to implement it. But sometimes, company has different ideas and plans, and maybe they might need me in a different location of that world.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're sat in an eActros 600 at the moment with the Pro Cabin. Yeah. Whilst I'm not seeing a huge amount of these on the UK roads at the moment, I am seeing some. Yeah. We are seeing plenty of diesel-powered Pro Cabins. So what's your market share like? Is it increasing? It seems to be, if what I'm seeing on the roads is anything to go by.
It's a good question, because one of our key metrics to measure performance and to measure success is the market share. We ended up last year, Will, with 10.2% market share for Mercedes-Benz trucks in the UK. I mean, above 6 tons, raw vehicle weight. honestly speaking, one of the lowest market shares we as Mercedes-Benz ever sort of achieved in the United Kingdom. But also in comparison, you know, to other European key markets, we are behind. The European average will is in and around 15 to 16%. And this is where we want to go to, and we will go to, frankly speaking. I would say what is encouraging, you know, the last quarter, 2025, we were in average in and around 13.5%. The first, I would say, 3 months, we will end up with 12.5%. We see good order intake. We have a healthy order bank, and I don't see any reason why we can get to 12, 13% in the year 2026.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Now, I've got to ask you about Miracan, because we've got a screen right next to your head there.
Yeah.
When it was launched, of course, it divided opinion. But what's the take-up rate now?
Yeah, good question. The take rate is, I would say, 87%.
Wow, exactly.
Year-to-date, 25, so full year, 25. You could say, why not 100? I say only 13%, you know, of our customers basically opted out. You know, it's standard, but you still have this, the opportunity to delete it if they want to. Customers still have a choice. So that's the current take rate. I think after now sort of, you know, many, many years, we also learned from our mistakes. The maturity of the Miracam is on a new level. So for me, 87% is a good achievement.
So remind us, what's better? Why aren't we hearing the complaints anymore?
So in the generation two now, we changed a few things. I think on the outside, the sort of 10 centimeter reduction in the arm length, has been well received. We have a better or sharper vision with enhanced imaging, brings it a bit closer to the old mirror perspective. Well, water and debris resistance has been improved with a new, I call it, mirror housing. Reversing has been made easier with a more intuitive imaging. And, you know, these things, when you reverse into a dark warehouse, you know, that is sometimes a bit of a challenge. And now with the addition of night vision, that clearly helped to improve the performance of the mirror cam. We listened and we learned from our drivers and the operators. Well, yeah.
Plus, of course, almost everyone have got them now. You came to market first, so it was a bit of a novelty. So you were going to get some negative feedback because it's a conservative industry, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, in the previous interview, you described the eActros as a game changer.
Yeah.
But you said infrastructure and cost parity were the real barriers. Mm-hmm. Has that balance shifted at all?
Vehicle is not the problem. Infrastructure is, for me, probably the biggest barrier, if I'm really honest, at the moment. Do I see a shift? I think slowly but steadily will, I would say here in the UK, we are closing the infrastructure gap. I would say it's a combination of, on the one side, government actions. And I'm really happy to see, you know, that maybe the grants communicated recently, these significant grants to stimulate BEV truck uptake, you know, it basically had a positive impact. I see, you know, funding tied to a national green freight strategy as one example. You know, when I look into the government actions, I see that long-term regulatory roadmap, the 2040 HGV phase out. That all helps. And I think what also helps to close the gap is the private sector actions. It's the combination of the two, you know, government and private. I see fleet investments in depots and grid connections. I see in innovative financial models that basically help to lower infrastructure costs. We see the development of multi-energy and high-power hubs. So there is, you know, movement, and that is good. But to be fair, the coverage is still in early development, and for me, not yet adequate for mass adoption, if that is English, So that's the challenge. So for me, the biggest obstacle in the UK is still the limited availability of, I would say, suitable charging, you know, infrastructure, especially when it comes to high power depot and public charging for heavy vehicles or heavy goods vehicles.
I think in the UK, we were 1.2% last year for electric trucks. What's it like in Germany? Is it significantly more? Because I know you've got the Melt incentives, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, definitely, you know, what helps are the combinations of government subsidy schemes and the German Maut or toll regime also clearly helps in order to increase the uptake. Yeah, I must admit, I don't know on the top of my head exactly the German numbers, but yes, it's definitely higher than in comparison to the United Kingdom.
Yeah,
yeah, same applies to Austria, same applies to Switzerland. Yeah.
So the eActros 600s we're seeing on UK roads now, are you selling those? Are you leasing those? Are people scared about the residual values? How is that all panning out?
Okay. Residual values is definitely, you know, a big ticket item when it comes to e-trucks. And maybe also when I listen to my customers, I call it battery longevity. These are two main concerns from our customers. How do we address those, you know, and you know, what do we sort of, you know, discuss with our customers? I think what really helps, frankly speaking, or helped, was the switch from NMC to LFP technology.
Okay.
You know, with a design life of 10 years and 1.2 million kilometers, Will, which is basically the same as a diesel truck. I will not go into the sort of, you know, the details why LFP batteries are better than NMC batteries. But that is something where I believe the battery question, we are not facing so many, you know, challenges, if I'm really honest. And that is also, you know, substantiated by our sort of warranty terms. However, when it comes to the RV, clearly it is a challenge and it is a risk. And how do we tackle that risk when it comes to RVs? I think our e-mobility approach includes, I call it charge management systems, energy management tools, operational support from our side, from our teams, that help maintain vehicle health and maximize uptime. And these are key factors for me, Will, when it comes to protecting residual values. But also our e-consulting approach provides, I would say, detailed financial and operational analysis for our customers. You know, we have transparent cost breakdowns. We help our customers to understand the TCO story. We talk about depreciation and available subsidies. And I think all these topics address RV risks and RV uncertainty by, I would say, giving fleets, I call it an evidence-based financial forecasting. So, and I think that's important in a market where early EV residuals lack historical data.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope that makes sense.
Yes, no? Yeah, it does. Something I want to touch on is technicians, because, I mean, without getting new staff,
yep,
and new people into this industry, well, the industry doesn't exist, does it?
Yep.
And I know it's something you're passionate about because you started as an apprentice yourself, I believe.
That's correct, Will, yeah.
So tell me, there is a technician shortage in the industry. How significant is that within the network?
Yeah, it is without any doubt a significant challenge. And for me, it's a big ticket item that really keeps me awake at night, Will, especially, you know, in light of the transformation of my network. It's not only about standards, you know, harmonization, what I said earlier. It's about, you know, people and winning the war for talent. And I realized fairly quick, you cannot simply recruit your way out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And therefore, you need to define new ways, different ways to tackle this growing challenge. What I can say also, as part of the network transformation, Will, we started with a complete new approach. When it comes to training, a new approach when it comes to apprentices. We sort of changed our structure. Leonhard Niemann, head of network, you know, now also responsible for training. For me, inevitably linked training and network. You know, we streamlined training activities, sales training, technical training, driver training, now all under one roof, under one manager. We relocated our training facility. You probably heard about that. We are now in Derbyshire. We did update our training programs. We introduced a state-of-the-art truck and bus learner management system that provides better clarity and steer. And for me, the most important one, we formed that strategic relationship with a company named Remit, which is now, I think, you know, named Inspiro, or is part, yeah, of the Inspiro group. And that is the way forward.
And is it easy to find apprentices? I'm assuming that three-pointed star has got to appeal to more youngsters than some other brands.
Yeah, yeah. So is it easy? No, the Star clearly helps. And frankly speaking, we as the manufacturer with our dealers, you know, work much better, much closer when it comes to attracting, you know, talent. Are we already there? No, if I'm really honest. I can speak openly about it. We need at least, you know, 120 apprentices per annum in order to sort of, you know, get to the current level, and we're not there yet. Yeah, and I deliberately say yet. Yeah, we have improved significantly over time from 23 to 24 to 25, but with the existing setup, with a new partner, I'm confident we're going to get there in 26.
Okay. So I remember when we did speak at that Grilled in the Calf, I was impressed with your honesty, and I came away thinking, is a man who is actually going to act upon what he's just told me.
Yep.
And it seems like you genuinely have. So, yep. Of the things you've introduced, what are you most proud of?
That's a good question. Transformation starts with me as an individual, as a person, and it starts with DTUK. And I would say the office move, the name change, the carve out of the truck business in general, these are the most visible ones. But the thing I'm really proud of is that I was able to form a complete new DTUK truck crew, a new team. And paired with a new team, we created, in my opinion, a new culture, a culture that is built on trust, empowerment, and customer centricity. If I'm honest, I was lacking that when I joined DTUK. And what we also achieved is more trust and more partnering spirit with our dealer partners. And that change of our, not the business model as such, but the new team and a new culture, that is something I'm really, really proud of.
Okay. Yeah. And let's reverse that a bit and tell me, what's the one area where you still have the most work to do?
Network density and network quality, absolutely. Okay. You know, we're sort of in the middle of our journey, and for me that is, you know, the main topic for the rest of my assignment here in the United Kingdom. Yeah, yeah.
So if we were to do an exit interview in a year or two's time, that's the thing you'd most like to have changed, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say network density and quality has further improved. We see the first own retail sites in full operation. And maybe one thing I would like to add, based on our, I call it new software-defined vehicle architecture, we have communicated and implemented our digital solutions strategy. That is, for me, the next big-ticket item following the electrification of the drivetrain.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, 2026 marks some significant anniversaries. I think it's 130 years of Daimler Trucks.
That is correct.
And 30 years of the Actros.
Yep.
Now, why do you think that truck has endured so long? And I think at that time it must have won at least 5 International Truck of the Years in its different guises.
Exactly. And 1996 was also the year, you know, when I started my apprenticeship. That's the reason why I'm laughing. And for me, well, the Actros has endured for 30 years because I think it consistently did something only a few trucks managed to do over time. It kept reinventing the benchmark while, I would say, staying reliable in daily operation. You know, I remember, you know, still sort of selling the last SKs, MKs, and then we launched this truck and it was a technological leap. It wasn't just, you know, an incremental update, and you probably remember intelligent automated shifting, maintenance systems, the electronically controlled disc brakes. These weren't small upgrades, they were step changes, and they were setting new standards from day one. But I would say instead of resting on these early successors, Mercedes-Benz kept improving the Actros with each generation. You know, we introduced active brake assist, ESP, we have lane keeping assist, we have predictive powertrain control. So there was, for me, a relentless, I would say, pace of innovation.
Yeah, you've been first to market for a lot of things,
exactly,
haven't you?
Exactly, yeah. And it kept it ahead of the competitors and therefore ensured, you know, that our operators saw the Actros always as a modern truck, if I'm honest, Will. So in summary, I think we never stop moving the benchmark. And when I talk to owners and drivers, they trust the Actros, and each generation we introduced with, I would say, truly meaningful improvements.
Yeah. Okay. As you just touched on then, it's also your 30th anniversary at Daimler. Now, when you look back over those 30 years, what's the biggest change you've seen in the truck industry? Sorry to drop that one on you.
No. I mean, there was so much change, but the question is the biggest change. Well, for me, the biggest change is, I'm using my own words, forgive me, maybe quite Germanic, the shift from, I would say, mechanical diesel trucks to digital, connected, and increasingly zero emission platforms. Maybe to put it in different words, we are turning trucks from heavy mechanical equipment into high-tech software-driven mobility platforms, if that is English. And I think it also has changed, you know, the way we develop products. I think it has changed the way we produce and manufacture products and trucks. It has changed how fleet operate. It has changed the aftermarket, and I think it has even changed the role of the driver.
Now, as we touched on earlier, you did start as an apprentice, and now you're running one of the biggest truck companies in the UK. What advice have you got for any youngsters entering the truck industry today?
You're in the right industry. you made a good choice.
There's so many opportunities, isn't there?
Exactly, I agree. But what would I say? First of all, you're in the right industry because, you know, 2/3 of all freight movements on that planet are still done by trucks, and it will continue to grow. So, the transport of goods and people is the lifeblood of our society, and therefore the demand for skilled, you know, people, workers, is significantly increasing. As a shortage in technicians, we spoke about it, you know, there's a shortage in apprentices, sales executives, not only in the UK, but also the whole of Europe. And I think as an apprentice, you have laid a good and strong foundation for a promising future. You can advance into various roles. Apprenticeship for me was always just the entry gate into this pretty cool industry. And there are new areas, e-mobility, digital customer solutions, we touched upon that. They offer new job profiles for you. So I would say make the move, embrace the learning process, stay committed, and then I'm convinced that you will find a rewarding, but also I would say a stable career in this industry. So join it,
Brilliant. And finally, after 3 decades with the company, what still excites you about the job? And don't say being interviewed by me, because I won't believe it.
I wouldn't say that. My early days, well, I started very basic, very simple as a junior sales executive. And it was for me such a steep learning curve because it came out of school and university. And how little did I know, you know, about trucking. And it was, for me, a good school in life, and it was building personality. For me, the biggest excitement is the regular touch point and interaction with my customers. And with every customer meeting, and I really mean it, I learn something new about the industry. I learn something new about customer requirements. With every meeting, I learn something about my own product and product performance, maybe I didn't know, and the areas I must further improve.
Excellent. Maiko, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you.